जन वल्लभ Yashodanandana Vraja Janaranjana Shri Srimad Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada Thakur ki jai. Ananta Koti Vishnu Vrinda ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. All glories to the assembly of devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Years ago, there was, Vijayatatna was distributing books, and the news interviewed him while he was out distributing books, and he was carrying one of these old-fashioned book bags, and the reporter asked him, "Isn't that bag heavy?" And Vijayatatna said, "Not as heavy as this material world." Did anybody else see that? I remember hearing about it when I was a new devotee. All right, so this book, and then we've got these backing up. So today we are reading from the second canto, chapter 7, text number 4. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Narayanam namaskritya naram cheva narottamam divim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam udirayat nasta praishvabhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtaki. Should we go on? We'll do that next time. So text 4. And I'll read the translation so that you have some idea what we're reading about in the Sanskrit. The great sage Atri prayed for offspring, and the Lord, being satisfied with him, promised to incarnate as Atri's son, Dattatreya, which means Datta, the son of Atri. I never noticed that before. Datta is his name, and Atreya means son of Atri, just like Maitreya means the son of Mitra. So, Dattatreya, the son of Atri. Datta, the son of Atri. And by the grace of the lotus feet of the Lord, many yadus, haihayas, etc., became so purified that they obtain both material and spiritual blessings. All right, so now going back to the Sanskrit. Atrera patyam abhikankshata ahatushto. Atrera patyam abhikankshata ahatushto. Datto mayahamiti yad bhagavan sadatta. Datto mayahamiti yad bhagavan sadatta.
Datto mayahamiti yad bhagavan sadatta.
Yat pada pankaja paraga pavitra deha. Yogardhima puru bhayam yaduhai hayadhya. Yogardhima puru bhayam yaduhai hayadhya. Go ahead.
Atre,
of the sage Atri, Avatyam,
Ishu,
Abhikankshataha,
having prayed for,
Aha,
said it,
Tushta,
being satisfied,
Datta,
given over,
Maya,
by me.
Aham,
myself.
Iti,
thus.
Yat,
because.
Bhagavan,
the personality of Godhead.
Sa,
he.
Datta,
Dattatreya.
Yat pada,
one whose feet.
Pankaja,
lotus.
Paraga,
dust.
Pavitra,
purified.
Deha,
body.
Yoga,
mystic.
Riddham,
with him.
Opulence.
Apu,
Gat. Ubhayim. For both the worlds. Yadu. The father of the Yadu dynasty. Haihaya Adya. And others like King Haihaya. Translation, the great sage Atri prayed for offspring, and the Lord, being satisfied with him, promised to incarnate as Atri's son, Dattatreya, Datta, the son of Atri. And by the grace of the lotus feet of the Lord, many Yadus, Haihayas, etc., became so purified that they obtained both material and spiritual blessings. Have an extra book here if anyone wants to read along, if you'd like to hold the book. Purport. Well, this is Brahma speaking to Narada. He's given a couple long chapters about answering Narada's question. Who are you? I thought you were supreme, but I see you praying, I see you doing austerities. Are you absolute? And so there's this long explanation of, no, I'm not. And he ends by saying, so now I will delineate the incarnations of the Lord. And so we are reading, how many are we into now? One, two, Kapila, Prajapati, Suyagya in the womb of Akuti, home of Lord Bor. So, yeah, we're in the fourth one, Dattatreya. And, all right, so he says, by thinking about these, I feel purified, I feel happiness by hearing about them. Okay, so purport, the transcendental relations between the personality of Godhead and the living entities are eternally established in five different affectionate humors, which are known as Shanta, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, and Madhurya. The sage Atri was related to the Lord in the affectionate Vatsalya humor, and therefore, as a result of his devotional perfection, he was inclined to have the personality of Godhead as his son. The Lord accepted his prayer, and he gave himself as the son of Atri. Such a relationship of sonhood between the Lord and his pure devotees can be cited in many instances. And because the Lord is unlimited, he has an unlimited number of father devotees. Factually, the Lord is the father of all living entities, but out of transcendental affection and love between the Lord and his devotees, the Lord takes more pleasure in becoming the son of a devotee than in becoming one's father. The father actually serves the son, whereas the son only demands all sorts of services from the father. Therefore, a pure devotee is always inclined to serve the Lord. A pure devotee who is always inclined to serve the Lord wants him as a son and not as the father. The Lord accepts such service from the devotee, and thus the devotee becomes more than the Lord. Okay, so far, Prabhupada hasn't said much at all about Dattatreya. Notice that in the whole purport, he doesn't say much at all about Dattatreya. All he's talking about is he accepted Atri as his father. And so he's talking about Vatsalya Ras. He's not going into the story of Dattatreya, and he's not going to. So I'm not going to either. I'm just going to stick to what Prabhupada's talking about here. We are going to go into it some, because Prabhupada does explain it later on. I was just thinking, what's going on in Prabhupada's life while he's writing this commentary? It's the second canto. I'm not sure exactly if... I think he's already in America by this time. While he's writing this, he's got some experience of Americans, and he wants to present what's most important. He doesn't know how much time he's got. And he's also thinking, well, if I continue writing the Bhagavatam, we'll get to that story later. In the fourth canto, he gets into it some. And if we have time, I'll read what he says about that there. It's kind of interesting. It's very interesting. Lord Brahma says he's interested in it. But Prabhupada seems to think this is more important. He starts off saying there are five different humors known as Shanta, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, and Madhurya. The sage Atri was related with the Lord in Vatsalya. Therefore, as a result of his devotional perfection, he was inclined to have the personality of Godhead as his son. Later on in the fourth canto, Prabhupada says he's not perfect. He's not a pure devotee. He wanted a son like the Lord. If he asked for the Lord as his son, then that would have been pure devotional service. But Prabhupada's not going to get into that here. He's just saying, isn't that nice to think of God as one's son? So continuing on, I see three main points in the purport. That's the first one, about talking about Vatsalya Ras. The impersonalists desire to become one with the Supreme, but the devotee becomes more than the Lord, surpassing the desire of the greatest monist. So there you go. That's the clue why Prabhupada does this. Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarani. His whole purpose is just to smash Mayavadis every chance he gets. So here he is. Here's a verse that's got nothing to do with Mayavadis, nothing to do with any of that. But just out of the blue, he says, this guy has a relationship with God. He's the father of God. The Mayavadis want to become one with God, but we have a desire even bigger than theirs. We want to become more than God. We want to become the father of God. The impersonalists desire to become one with the Supreme, but the devotee becomes more than the Lord, surpassing the desire of the greatest monist. Prabhupada's little joke there in the purport. Parents and other relatives of the Lord achieve all mystic opulences automatically because of their intimate relationship with the Lord. Such opulences include all details of material enjoyment, salvation, and mystic powers. Therefore, the devotee of the Lord does not seek them separately, wasting his valuable time of life. The valuable time of one's life must therefore be fully engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Then, other desirable achievements are automatically gained. Okay, so that's what I see as the second point in the purport. Serve the Lord, don't look for anything else, don't waste your time with anything else, and you'll get everything you need. And then point number three is coming up. But after obtaining such achievements, one should be on guard against the pitfalls of offenses at the feet of the devotees. The vivid example is Haihaya, who achieved all such perfection in devotional service, but because of his offense at the feet of a devotee, was killed by Lord Parashuram. The Lord became the son of the great sage Atri and became known as Dattatreya. So Prabhupada just throws in this whole, just Haihaya, like, yeah, everybody knows Haihaya. And he achieved all of this, but he lost it all because of his offense at the feet of a devotee and was killed by Lord Parashuram. Prabhupada just throws that out, doesn't go into details. Later on, we're going to find out in the ninth canto, he explains that story. So we'll touch on that. But first of all, I wanted to talk about Vatsalya Ras. I feel nervous because Deva Madhava is here. It's just like, always has really good insights. But anyway, I'll try. We went to some people's home in Wilmington, North Carolina. So a yoga teacher and her husband, and she had a whole group of people, and we were going to have a kirtan on the beach as the new moon was rising up out of the ocean, or the full moon was rising up out of the ocean. But it was raining that day, so we met at her house, and we read a chapter of Bhagavad Gita, and we discussed Bhagavad Gita, and it was really good. It was so good that after everyone had prasad, all of the guests left, I talked with her and her husband, and we just kept going on and on. And it was about 11 o'clock when we said, all right, this is getting too late. We got to go to sleep. We got to stop this. And she said, yeah, but one more thing. And so it was about 1 o'clock in the morning when we got to the point where I was saying, you know, all of yoga is about controlling the mind and bringing it to one central focal point, because our mind is so distracted. Three modes of nature, all the things that come about, rajas, tamas, they just get us all scattered. And then when we get to that focal point, that central point, so I had my arms out like this, and I brought my fingertips together, and they get closer and closer as we get better and better at meditation. Then we come to this central point, and we achieve peace. And then, it was the first time I ever did it. I just went like that. And I said, but all of that drama and emotion, those lines continue. And there's a whole other realm up above that. Once you reach that focal point where you give up all of your own interests, then there's a whole other realm of drama and emotion. And all of a sudden, the lights went on in her head. She was like, I had a feeling there was something there. And then I pulled out this book and I said, this book talks about what's going on that other realm. And she said, I got to read that. And I talked about the five different rasas. And she was like almost crying. She was just too busy to cry. Like, I got to read this. Tell me more about it. And so then I started showing her the things in the Nectar of Devotion. This is such a cool book for Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarani. And Prabhupada, it's amazing, Prabhupada wrote this in 1969 in the middle of everything else that he was doing. And to the audience that he had, they were brand new, spoon-feeding, you know, little kids. We didn't know much at all. And then when he finally had it published, there's a very short lecture where he says, now we have this book, Nectar of Devotion. I want everyone to read it. And if you don't understand it, I don't want you to write to me and ask, Prabhupada, what is this? If you don't understand it, you should read it again. And if you don't understand it then, you should read it again. He really wanted everyone to read this book, and it's so amazing how it came out so early on, in 1969. And so a handful of sincere devotees studied it. You can, like, there's a couple lectures by Vishnujan Swami, and you can hear he's sincerely trying to understand this, and he's quoting things from it and doing a pretty good job. So, since Prabhupada brought up Vatsalya Ras, I'm going to read a little bit from this, and you'll be amazed what it says about Vatsalya Ras. This is way, three-fourths of the way through the book. After most of us have studied the beginning parts, it talks about what bhakti is, what it isn't. What's that verse? Anya vilashita shunyam jnana karma janavritam. Anukulyena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhakti Uttam. And so it talks about the, what is it? The Lakshanam, the, you know, what it is and what it isn't. What are the?
Intrinsic
and extrinsic. Okay. But the Sanskrit terms for those.
Tatastha
Lakshana. Yeah, that's what I thought. Tatastha Lakshana. And Shwarup Lakshanam. Okay. And anyone that's taken the Bhakti Shastri course, I haven't. But I have a lot of friends that have, and they're talking about that. And then, like, cool, well, keep going. Read the rest of the book. That verse is really cool, but keep going. And I've found that even for brand new people, like we had a group of college students that were coming to our place when we lived in Boone, and one of them was studying oceanography, and she was just really into oceanography and sharks, and I said, wow, we've got a book on oceanography. It was written 500 years ago, and it's called The Ocean. And I said, what we're reading about in the Bhagavad Gita, the devotion, it says there's a whole ocean of it, and that you should aspire to not just be a drop in the ocean, but you should be a shark swimming in that ocean. She said, oh, I want to read that book. And so I took it out, and a really nice chapter to introduce people to that have some introduction to bhakti is devotional service in ecstasy. And it's so encouraging. It says, it's a few chapters in, and it says that after you practice the regulations of bhakti, you actually rise above the influence of the three modes of material nature. And just like when you get in an airplane and you go up over the clouds, the sun's always shining there. And so when you've achieved that stage, Maya can't touch you anymore. Unhappiness, anger, none of the bad qualities in the material world can affect you anymore. And so it goes on explaining how that comes about, and it comes about by association with devotees. It just sounds so encouraging, and new people read that. I'm like, well, okay, I can do that, yeah. Give me a couple weeks, I'll get there. And there's some really fun things in there. And toward the end, it talks about different kinds of hearts. Let's see, there's a heart of shellac. It talks about a heart of gold. And, you know, everybody old days remembers the song, looking for a heart of gold. And so they melt at different temperatures. And so it talks about devotees who just a few little things can stimulate them to the point where their heart starts to melt. And so that's fun to read. This is for like people that have come to like, you know, 4 or 5 Bhagavad Gita classes, then like, all right, let's show you this. This is where we're going to. And it says, you know, take 5 or 6 of these things to melt a heart of gold. And someone that's got a heart of shellac, it melts a little easier. And then there are some people whose hearts are always melted and their heart is made of nectar. It's always melted. So it's a really fun book. Read it. And any book that you want to get, you got to read it like 3 times in a row. And we had this really nice, simple morning program going for a while where I was reading a couple pages from this while the ladies were doing temple things. So I'd read it, and then I'd try to repeat back what I just read. And they would also repeat back what they had heard and understood. And we went through the book 2.5 times, almost 3 times. But by doing it, you start to get a feel for a book. So reading and discussing. So I felt like I was starting to get a grip on it, but that was like about 5 years ago. Now we're going through all these other books. Anyway, chapter 43 is parenthood, if anyone online is listening and wants to get out their copy or look it up on the Veda base. Chapter 43, parenthood. When ecstatic love develops into the relationship of parenthood and becomes steadily established, the relationship is called Vatsalya Ras. So within that statement, Prabhupada is, there's all of these Sanskrit terms, and he's trying his best to put them in simple English for us to get. And you read this book, and then you read the one with the Sanskrit in it, and you see what Prabhupada has put in, and how he's taken this great big thing and distilled it down to this little thing, to get a lot deeper appreciation for what he's saying. It can help understand some of the things that he's saying. Yeah, it's just amazing how he did all of this. Okay, so when ecstatic love develops, so that in itself, ecstatic love, there's a Sanskrit term for that, develops into the relationship of parenthood and becomes steadily established. That's another technical term. The relationship is called Vatsalya Ras. The exhibition of this Vatsalya Ras standard of devotional service can be found in the dealings of Krishna with his devotees, who represent themselves as superior personalities like father, mother, and teacher. I'm going to skip. I'll read this. The learned scholars have described the impetuses for parental love for Krishna existing in the elderly personalities who are in relation with him as follows. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose bodily complexion is just like a bluish, new-grown lotus flower, whose body is very delicate, and whose lotus eyes are surrounded by scattered hair as black as bees, was walking on the streets of Vrindavan when Mother Yashoda, the beloved wife of Nanda Maharaj, saw him. Immediately the milk began to flow from her breasts, soaking her body. Some specific provocations for parental love of Krishna are listed as, okay, now here's a list, see how many you can remember. So these are the specific provocations for parental love of Krishna. His blackish bodily hue, which is very attractive and pleasing to see, his all auspicious bodily features, his mildness, his sweet words, his simplicity, his shyness, his humility, his constant readiness to offer respect to the elderly, and his charity. All of these qualities are considered ecstatic provocations for parental love. So those are 9 things. Can anyone want to recite them in order? Some people can do that. Good. Yeah, that was 1. She got it. Thank you. Blackish bodily hue, which is very attractive and pleasing to see. Yes, his all auspicious bodily features, yes.
His humility,
thank you.
Shyness,
yes.
Sweet
words, somebody said.
Sweet
words, yes.
Mildness.
Charity, yeah. Yes, his constant readiness to offer respect to the elderly. Anything else? I think we got most of them. And we can think, for those of you who are old enough to have children, or maybe had a younger brother or sister, how those kinds of things also give you some kind of feeling. You know, when you see just the form of the child, and even their complexion and the shape of their body, all of those things. So this is so natural for us. And when I'm talking with new people, especially if they have little kids, especially a mother with a little baby, I show them this chapter, and they're like so happy, like, I can get into this religion. This is something I can relate to. So let's see. Now I gotta hurry to touch on half of the stuff I want to talk about. So these are the things that some specific provocations for parental love of Krishna. And so here, these are called the vibhavas. And later on, it's going to talk about the udipanas, the things that invoke parental love. Once Mother Yashoda addressed one of her friends in this way. Nanda Maharaj, the leader of the cowherd men, worshipped Lord Vishnu along with me. And as a result of this worship, Krishna has been saved from the clutches of Putana and other demons. So this shows the mindset of someone in Vatsalya Ras. They're always thinking, it's because of me that Krishna is still alive. It's only because Nanda Maharaj and I worshipped Lord Narayan, Lord Vishnu, And because of that, he's been saved from Putana and other demons. The twin Arjuna trees were, of course, broken due to a strong wind. And although Krishna appeared to have lifted Govardhan Hill along with Balaram, I think that Nanda Maharaj actually held the mountain. Otherwise, how could it have been possible for a little boy to lift such a great hill? Here you go. My husband did it. He lifted Govardhan Hill. Yeah, they're all like, we're going to help him out. We're going to help him out. We got it, Krishna. Yeah, that's also in here. His friends, it also talks about Sakyaras, devotional service and friendship. Wow, Radha Bhushan is here. Hari Bol. It talks about devotional service and friendship, and all the cowherd boys are thinking like, Krishna, I'll hold it up for a minute. If you want to let your hand down, I'll give it a massage. The other boys will hold it up for you. We'll be all right. And, okay, we won't go off onto that, because there's, okay, this, this is another example of ecstasy and parental love. This kind of parental love is generated in a devotee out of his conviction in love that he himself is superior to Krishna, and that without being taken care of by such a devotee, Krishna could not possibly live. One devotee therefore prayed to the parents of Lord Krishna as follows: let me take shelter of the elderly parental devotees of Lord Krishna. They are always anxious to serve Krishna and to maintain him, and they are always so kind to him. Let us offer our respectful obeisances unto them for being so kind to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the parent of the whole universe. In the Upadeshamrita, which is another amazing book, in the midst of all that was going on, Prabhupada said, we need Upadeshamrita. I'll just translate that. And so he put that together really quickly. And in that verse, in that book, which is only 11 verses, Rupa Goswami's vast library, millions of verses he wrote, incredible amount of books that he's written. So he's taken it all and distilled it into 11 verses. And out of those 11 verses, he's distilled it into one verse that says, the essence of all advice is that one should always be reading about, talking about, and discussing Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's abode. And then he says, one should live in Braj, and one should find someone who is in one of these rasas and serve them in order to get in there. So Prabhupada gave the little hints there in his books. Within ISKCON, Prabhupada was so strong against jumping into it prematurely that we're afraid to even talk about it publicly sometimes. But still, it's there. It's in his books. And so we'll quote from that. And at least we can think about thinking about it. So he's saying, here's a devotee looking at the example of Nanda and Yashoda and saying, it's kind of parental, let me take shelter of the elderly parental devotees of Lord Krishna. They're always anxious to serve Krishna and to maintain him. They're always so kind to him. Let us offer our respectful obeisances unto them for being so kind to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the parent of the whole universe. To move on, the description of Nanda Maharaj's bodily features is as follows. Oh, wait, here's one more thing I got to read. Following is a list of respectful personalities who enjoy parental affection toward Krishna. And this list is given in order of importance. Number one is Yashoda. You already read the book. Number two, Nanda Maharaj, the king of Braj. Number three, Rohini, the mother of Balaram. Number four, this is not what you're expecting. No.
A man or a woman?
Women. A bunch of women. In Vrindavan. All the cowherd women in Vrindavan who had Krishna as their son for 1 year when Brahma stole their sons away. So they're number four. So, Yashoda, Nanda, Rohini, all of the gopis in Vrindavan, the elderly gopis. Number five. Now we're getting into Mathura. Devaki. Devaki. Number six. No. The other 15 wives of Vasudev. And number seven, you're not going to get this. Kunti, the mother of Arjuna. Vasudev's number eight. But he's in the list, number eight. That's pretty cool. And number nine is Sandipani Muni, Krishna's teacher. All these are considered respectable elderly personalities with parental love for Krishna. This list is in order of superior importance, and thus we can see that Mother Yashoda and Maharaj Nanda are considered to be the supermost of all elderly personalities. And the reason for that is it's depending on their knowledge of Krishna being God. The more they're aware of that, the further down the list they are. Yashoda has no idea at all. And when Krishna shows that he's God, she's like, I don't know what's going on here, but Lord Vishnu, protect my child. I don't know what's happening to him. There's another demon attacking. She's just thinking, I got to protect him. It never phases her that he's God. Nanda Maharaj, also really similar. A couple of times, even when Krishna does show, I'm God, and all the cowherd men are asking, Krishna does some amazing things. You think he might be a demigod? And Nanda Maharaj says, Gargamuni, yeah, thank you. Gargamuni said he would be equal to Narayan, just like Narayan. And you think maybe he is? And the men were saying, well, if he is, let's go ask him what's going to happen in our next lives. And so Krishna shows them, well, here's where you're going to be in your next life. And they say, well, hey, it looks just like Vrindavan. So they just thought, well, that's pretty cool. And then Nanda Maharaj just, again, it doesn't faze him at all. When Arjuna sees Krishna's universal form, he begins to address Krishna very differently. But we don't see that with Yashoda or with Nanda Maharaj. So here's a description of Nanda Maharaj. The hairs on his head are generally black, but some of them are gray. His garments are of greenish color, like the new-grown leaves of a banyan tree. His belly is fatty. His complexion is exactly like the full moon. And he has a beautiful mustache. When Krishna was a baby, one day, he was walking in the courtyard, capturing the finger of his father, and because he could not walk steadily, he appeared to be almost falling down. While Nanda Maharaj was giving protection to his transcendental son in this way, all of a sudden there were drops of tears in his eyes, and he became overwhelmed with joy. Let us offer our respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of King Nanda. Childhood age, childish dress, movements by the child, sweet words spoken by the child, nice smiling, and various forms of childish play are considered provocations for increasing parental love for Krishna. The childhood ages of Krishna are divided into three periods: the beginning of Komara age, the middle of Komara age, and the end of Komara age. During the beginning and middle of the Komara age, Krishna's thighs are fatty, and the inner part of his eyes are whitish. There are signs of teeth coming out, and he is very mild and gentle. He is described as follows. When Krishna had only three or four teeth coming out of his gums, his thighs were fatty. His body was very, very short, and he began to enhance the parental love of Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda with the activities of his childish body. He was sometimes stepping with his legs again and again, sometimes crying, sometimes smiling, sometimes sucking his thumbs, and sometimes lying down flat. These are some of the different activities of the child Krishna. When Krishna was lying down flat, sometimes sucking the toes of his feet, sometimes throwing his legs upward, sometimes crying, and sometimes smiling, Mother Yashoda, seeing her son in such pastimes, did not show any sign of restricting him, but rather began to watch her child with eagerness, enjoying these childhood pastimes. In the middle Komara age, the upper portion of Krishna's hair falls around his eyes. Sometimes he is covered with cloth around the lower part of his body, and sometimes he is completely naked. Sometimes he tries to walk, taking step by step, and sometimes he talks very sweetly in broken language. These are some of the symptoms of his middle Komara age. He is thus described when Mother Yashoda once saw him in his middle Komara age. His scattered hairs were touching his eyebrows, and his eyes were restless, but he could not express his feelings with proper words. Still, when he was talking, his talk was so nice and sweet to hear. When Mother Yashoda looked at his little ears and saw him naked, trying to run very quickly with his little legs, she was merged into the ocean of nectar. Krishna's ornaments at this age are a pearl hanging from the septum of his nose, butter in his lotus-like palms, and some small bells hanging from his waist. It is stated that when Mother Yashoda saw that the child was moving, ringing the bells on his waist, smiling at her with a pearl between his nostrils, and with butter on his hands, she became wonderfully pleased to see her little child in that fashion. Okay, that's all it takes for a mom. We're running out of time. Okay, so it talks about what she's attracted to, and now we're talking about In enjoying Krishna's attitude of stealing butter very stealthily, Mother Yashoda experienced the ecstasy of maternal love by smelling his head, sometimes patting his body with her hand, sometimes offering blessings, sometimes ordering him, sometimes gazing at him, sometimes maintaining him, and sometimes giving him good instructions not to become a thief. Such activities are based in maternal ecstatic love. The general activities of all the mothers of the cowherd boys were to kiss them, to embrace them, to call them by their names, and sometimes to chastise them mildly for their stealing habits. These manifestations of parental love are called sattvika ecstasy. Sometimes there are examples of Mother Yashoda becoming stunned in ecstasy. This was exhibited when she saw her son lifting Govardhan Hill. When Krishna was standing, raising the hill, Mother Yashoda hesitated to embrace him and became stunned. The dangerous position that Krishna had accepted by lifting the hill brought tears to her eyes. With her eyes filled with tears, she could not see Krishna anymore, and because her throat was choked up by anxiety, she could not even instruct Krishna as to what he should do in that position. This is a symptom of becoming stunned in ecstatic love. Mm-mm-mm. Okay, being stunned by seeing him now is when he's away. Let's see, Mother Yashoda was too anxious to hear the sound of Krishna's flute, expecting him back from the pasturing grounds. Because she thought that it was getting very late, her anxiety to hear the sound of Krishna's flute became doubled, and milk began to flow from her breast. In that condition, she was sometimes going within the house, sometimes coming out of the house. She was constantly looking to see if Govinda was coming back along the road. All right, we've got 10 minutes left. Should I keep going with this, or do you want to hear about Dattatreya? Krishna, Dattatreya? Okay. When Akura was present in Vrindavan and was narrating the activities of Krishna and Dwaraka, Mother Yashoda was informed that Krishna had married so many queens and was very busy there in his household affairs. Hearing this, Mother Yashoda lamented how unfortunate she was that she could not get her son married just after he passed his Kaishora age, and that she therefore could not receive both her son and daughter-in-law in her home. She exclaimed, "My dear Akura, you're simply throwing thunderbolts on my head." These are signs of lamentation on the part of Mother Yashoda in separation from Krishna. Something I forgot to mention back with the younger ages, that Mother Yashoda always sees Krishna in as a baby, even when he's grown up. And similarly, when Krishna is a baby, there are devotees that only see Krishna in his full-grown, mature Kaishora age. And these would specifically be administrative demigods that worship Krishna. They see that little baby and they're thinking, that's Krishna. They don't see him as a baby. So Mother Yashoda sees that. And I was thinking, we kind of do that too. Us older people. Like when I get with my brothers and my sister, we're like kids again. And we're like, I know who you are. And, you know, that's the way we see each other because that's how we grew up. We were just kids. So Mother Yashoda, she's full-grown Krishna. Let's see. There's a bit I skipped over about when she goes to Kurukshetra to see Krishna. Oh, man. As soon as she sees him. Now, that's the thing that's talked about here so much. The way that Vatsalya Ras is manifest in the bodies of the devotees is from milk and tears. And it talks about that in the chapter 11 of the first canto when Krishna arrives in Dwaraka. And there's a Sanskrit phrase, sneha snutam, which means moistened with affection. Everybody was wet. Everybody was crying, all the women, there was milk. Everyone was just a mess. It was dripping wet with affection. And Prabhupada talks about that. It says that the reception was full of feeling. It wasn't like a dry, pompous ceremony to receive some dignitary. But everyone was crying, and there was a lot of emotion there. So when Yashoda, when all of the residents of Vrindavan arrive with their bullock carts at Kurukshetra, and they got the tents and the elephants and the horses and the armor, and then here's these village people pulling up in their ox carts, and then in front of them all is this woman who is, as soon as she sees Krishna, she just totally loses it, and Krishna loses it too. And they get together and they're just sitting, she puts him on her lap and she's just crying, And everyone says, and even Devaki says, you're the real mother. It can't be denied. And Nanda Maharaj is right behind. He's number two. So, Mother Yashoda felt frustration when she thought, although I have millions of cows, the milk of these cows could not satisfy Krishna. Therefore, let a curse be on this milk. And I also am condemned because although I am so opulent in material prosperity, I am now unable to smell the head of my child and feed him with my breast milk as I used to do when he was here in Vrindavan. This is a sign of frustration on the part of Mother Yashoda in separation from Krishna. One friend of Krishna's addressed him thus, my dear lotus-eyed one, when you are living in Gokul, you are always bearing a stick in your hand. That stick is now lying idle in the house of Mother Yashoda. And whenever she sees it, she becomes motionless, just like the stick. This is a sign of becoming stunned in separation from Krishna. Sometimes in restlessness, like a madwoman, Mother Yashoda used to accuse Nanda Maharaj, what are you doing in the palace, you shameless man? Why do people call you the king of Braj? It is very astonishing that while being separated from your dear son Krishna, you are still living within Vrindavan as a hard-hearted father. Someone informed Krishna about the madness of Mother Yashoda in the following words. In madness, Mother Yashoda has addressed the Kadamba tree and inquired from them, where is my son? Similarly, she has addressed the birds and the drones and inquired from them whether Krishna has passed before them, and she has inquired if they can say anything about you. In this way, Mother Yashoda, in illusion, was asking everybody about you, and she has been wandering all over Vrindavan. When Nanda Maharaj was accused by Mother Yashoda of being hard-hearted, he replied, my dear Yashoda, why are you becoming so agitated? Kindly look more carefully. Just see, your son Krishna is standing before you. Don't become a madwoman like this. Please keep my home peaceful. And Krishna was informed by some friend that his father Nanda was also in illusion in this way, in separation from him. Oh man, it's 9 o'clock. All right, so I better open up. Is there any questions or discussion? So, yes.
It was mentioned there that Krishna's little teeth are starting to manifest. So the only deity in Vrindavan that has teeth is Radharaman. So Radharaman, if you look pictures from the internet, you look through the different pictures, you can see Krishna's lips, sometimes showing the teeth a little, sometimes a lot, and sometimes in different ways. Hmm. So that's a deity that's actually manifesting the teeth, Radharaman. Very beautiful.
Hmm.
And that, of course, Radharaman is formed from one of the Shalagram Shilas that's still on his back.
Yeah. Haribo, Radharaman Ki Jai.
When I was in L.A. In around 71, you know, Srila Prabhupada used to come out from his entrance and go for his morning walk. Jari Tirtha would drive him. So I was reading the Nectar of Devotion, was one of the first books that I read. So I was reading Nectar of Devotion right away. So this time when Srila Prabhupada came out, I screamed out, all glories to the coward boys, like that. And later on, Jari Tirtha told me, Srila Prabhupada asked, who's that boy who said all glories to the coward boys?
Okay, good job, Governor Ryan.
Mitra Sen Prabhu, you did it again. I just look forward to your classes.
Aww.
It is very evident that you are a serious reader and studier of Srila Prabhupada's books, and the beautiful art you have of connecting anyone and everyone, whatever their interest is or situation is, to Srila Prabhupada's book, something specific right in the book. I love it. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Distribute Nectar of Devotion in mass to the public in the early 70s. But you know about smelling the head. Could you elaborate on that? Like, we don't really have that in our culture, do we? That you smell the head of the children. But they really, it really like stimulates their love. Anybody, maybe anyone from India, is it like an Indian thing? Smell the head of your child.
I did it.
What'd you say?
I did it.
You did, all right.
Yeah. I remember my little brother, he's 6 years younger than me, and I would take care of him, and I liked.
Oh, okay.
I don't know, there's something there that.
Yeah.
That I did it with our kids. And if I'm borrowing somebody else's kid, I might sneak a sniff. Yeah. But yeah, thanks. I forgot to bring that up. Yes, it is a lot. It's mentioned a lot in this chapter.
And usually it's not Maharaj. You don't hear so much Yasoda doing it.
Well, because she's giving them her milk, and that's there too. But it does also say in a couple times, what didn't we just read that? She said, when? I want to smell his head. What's the use of all my opulence? Yeah, here it is. Let there be a curse on this milk, and I am also condemned, because although I'm so opulent in material prosperity, I'm now unable to smell the head of my child and feed him with my breast milk.
Thanks, Prabhu. Wonderful katha. The point you brought out about the natural connection that even a brand new mom can have a sense of Yashoda's devotion to Krishna because of her own sense of affection towards her child. I'd like you to elaborate more on that, if there's any place for that in the life of a sadhaka, if it's not just a kind of like draw in for the new person. Is there, because I notice that devotees often shut off their emotions and don't allow for those kind of natural connections to be felt and seen. So is there some place for that being a kind of practice?
It sounds like you've got something in mind. What do you have? What are you thinking? Go ahead.
It's really only a question because recently I've been, in my Bhagavatam study, it's come up in two places, one in the 11th canto and one in the 10th canto. And the 10th canto, Parikshit asks quite plainly, isn't the attraction of the gopis for Krishna mundane? And Shukadeva replies, quite surprisingly, rather than launching into the transcendental nature of their affection, he basically says, so what if it is? Because now they're completely absorbed in Krishna. And it's an interesting point.
Oh, yeah.
That the and then in the 11th canto, the verse is yatra, yatra, mano dehi, whatever the emotion may be, if one allows that emotion to anchor them to Krishna, then it becomes successful. And that's Krishna himself speaking to Uddhava. So it just kind of triggered this interest in me over the last few months, and your point today about it's something that we would naturally say to a new person, but then we would tell somebody who's been around for 3-4 years, don't care about your children and, you know, only care about Krishna, and there's a divorce between the two. And so that's where I was coming from.
Are devotees still saying that? Don't care for your children?
Well, I'm offering these extreme example, but we've heard these things, and these things have been presented, and in some ways still are. At least it's subtly felt in the community, so.
It's there in the books, and it could be taken that way.
But even beyond, I'm not talking about the kind of natural, okay, be a good human that's become popular in our community these days, thank God. I'm talking about the relationship between material affection and the potential for spiritual affection. Is there any bridge there that's actually meant to be felt?
We could, if we were driving back from the Rainbow Gathering, and we could We could really open this up, but he's got something.
She asked Prabhupada in the letters that I have my deities and I have my child, so what am I to do? Is that Prabhupada said, your deity is your child. So that in other words, the whole focus then is going to be on the child. And you think, well, Prabhupada would say, well, spend an hour a day on your deities and then the rest of the time with your kid. No, he said, your deity is your child. So.
Okay. The way he worded that, just in case someone misunderstood, your child is your deity. I think that's what he meant to say.
What makes that even more significant is that she was concerned she was doing deity worship in the temple. You know how Prabhupada would say,
yes.
What makes that even more significant is that she was doing deity worship in the temple. And Prabhupada says, then don't do deity worship. You take care of your child. This child is a Vaikuntha child. And if you don't take care of him, bring him to me and I will take care of him.
Okay, so that's the duty side of it, where your duty is, and that's good. Now we're talking about affection, because everything we read about here is affection for Krishna in Vatsalya Ras. Can we have that kind of affection for our own child? And is that healthy for a devotee to have that kind of affection? Is that what your nature of your question is?
No.
Okay.
It's more the experience that I'm having as an affectionate parent or a friend. Let's take it out of that realm because children are sensitive. So I have a friend
and I want to make Krishna my friend. Taking my emotional experience of ultimately mundane friendship, can that inform how I approach Krishna? Trying to be his friend.
Oh, now I'm really confused.
It's a practice, right? We get to practice with people.
Practice with people.
Yeah, and it opens the heart so that we can have more emotion with spiritual and hearing when we hear about. Like everyone's so enlivened by this class, so we all are feeling. And Prabhu has come all the way from California because he's about to be a grandfather. So because of the affection of the baby that's not even here yet. And for his daughter to support her.
Okay, so Kamalini was saying we can practice on people to develop our affection for Krishna. I like that. I like that idea. How does that sit with you?
Yeah, I mean,
okay, thumbs
like
up.
All your examples of preaching. You know, how on all your classes you talk about, you know, how you preach. So how you do that with all the people that you preach to. You know, you you have very loving relationships and it brings you closer to Krishna, right? Because when you're glorifying Krishna to them, then you feel more connected and more in love with Krishna, right?
Good job. Yeah, thank you. I like that. I'll go with that. And I was thinking preaching, well, some aspects of it are kind of like Vatsalya Ras. Like, you got the new people, and when they're trying to read the Sanskrit and they're stumbling over it, I love it. Some devotees get really upset by it, and I just love it. I love it when they say it wrong. And then they get misconceptions from reading it. I'll let it go sometimes, unless it's something really bad. Just, okay, keep going, they'll get it.
And I was thinking in the pages of Krishna book, we see that how the gopis were very affectionate to their own sons, described, you know, and they were affectionate. And but yet they had a very special feeling for Krishna. So in one sense, one can say that having affection for your own children is good, is natural. And yet, depending on our consciousness, we can have that special affection, if we are, let's say in Vatsalya Ras, we're talking about here today, we can have a very special affection for Krishna as well. And not as well, it's just very so special that then you get to have Krishna as your son for a year. So, in other words, it's not this or that, but more for Krishna. Well, Krishna is the center. I mean, that's one way to see that.
Good. Yes. Kind of like what Kamalini was saying. We can practice on people. And really, that's all we have. There's a really cool verse in the Bible. I wish the people out preaching on the streets and shouting and condemning everyone, I wish they would quote this one. It said that if you claim to love me, but you don't love your fellow man, I don't believe you. Because you haven't seen me yet. You've seen this person, and you don't love them. So how can I expect you to love me when you see me? And for some reason, the number on that is 420. Last time I put it out to the world, everyone's saying, yeah, 420, man. I forget which book it's in. Okay, so yeah, practice on people, and then we can read these and relate to them. Like after you've had kids and you've been through this, you read this and you can relate to it a lot more. It's like, okay, I get what they're talking about. Did somebody else?
I'm just wondering, does anybody here listen to the late morning program with Namras?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, today I finally listened to Deva Madhava. I didn't realize that was you. And it's one of the very, very best. And it's related to this class because his focus is people and relationships and not just buildings, you know, temples. And it was so inspiring. Honestly, during japa, I was contemplating if he would allow me to move there. Because I did spend 10 years in Michigan and it was my favorite place. But it's so incredible. So what's the name of it? Is it Harmony Collective, the name of the interview?
Oh.
Or do you know what number it is?
Something from Something to Harmonize.
All right. It's really incredible. And Deva Madhava Prabhu is a real cutting edge preacher in our movement, always has been since day one. And I highly recommend everyone listen to it. What'd you say?
We would love it.
Oh, you would? You would tolerate
whatever
me?
Whatever we're doing is just the wake of your piety.
Yeah, it's really.
So something I heard, it must have been 20 years ago. This devotee from Europe said to me, we're traveling with Festival of India and setting up tents and staying up weird hours. And he said, he talked to someone who studies religious organizations. And he said, most churches give, I forget the exact percentage, but something like 70, they spend 75% of their energy working with the congregation. No, wait a minute. Like 60% of their energy working on the congregation, 40% on the building. But you Hare Krishna people, you're very different. You spend 90%. And I thought, yeah, on people and
on
buildings. And maybe 10% on your people. And I said, no, that can't be right. And he said, well, think about it. And I did think about it. And I said, all right, you got me. All right. And so from that point on, I just said, I'm not doing anything with buildings anymore. I'm focusing on people. And like, let everybody else build it, and I'll sweep a floor if, like, there's a new person there, and I'll say, hey, this is really fun. We're going to sweep the floor. I'm going to show you how, and get the new person in on it. And so that's been my...
Yeah,
thing ever since.
Spoke about, you know, not just recruiting new people, but taking care of the people we have.
There was a, in relationship to what you're saying, both of you are saying, there was a devotee, he was on an airplane, and he was just like a devotee. He sat down next to a priest, and the priest said, oh, he said, you're Hare Krishna. He said, yes. He said, yes, I remember prasadam. Yeah, yes, I remember the chanting. The devotee's looking at him like, what? He said, yeah, I was a devotee once in the temple for some years. And he said, and like, well, what happened? He said, oh, because in this kind, he said, there's no fellowship. So it was like, you know, that really hit home to that other devotee. You know, we're not taking care of our own, you know, brothers, sisters, like that.
Okay, fellowship, ki jai. Sangha, Hari Bhakta Sangha. All right. Thank you, everyone. Hare Krishna. In my Bible, we come ki jai. Dattatreya ki jai. Yeah.